From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
In advance of voting Tuesday in presidential primaries in California, New Jersey, and four other states, the Associated Press and much of the U.S. media proclaimed Hillary Clinton already the Democratic nominee. Nevertheless, Bernie Sanders, looking at the actual delegate count and the rules governing the selection process, vowed that he will fight on to the Democratic convention, which he said will be contested. This was Sanders speaking at a press conference Saturday in Los Angeles about the delegates.
In terms of delegate math, I think there is some confusion in the media. Right now, in terms of delegate math, as you all know, it requires 2,383 votes, delegate votes, to clinch the Democratic nomination. As of today, Secretary Clinton has 1,769 pledged delegates, and I have 1,501 pledged delegates. It is extremely unlikely that Secretary Clinton will have the requisite number of pledged delegates to claim victory on Tuesday night. Now, I have heard reports that Secretary Clinton has said it's all going to be over on Tuesday night. I have heard reports that the media, after the New Jersey results come in, are going to declare that it is all over. That simply is not accurate. There are 931 pledged delegates at stake in contests between today and June 14. For Secretary Clinton to get to the magic number of 2,383, she would have to win two-thirds of those pledged delegates. Frankly, unless I am very, very mistaken, that is absolutely not going to happen. In other words, at the end of the nominating process, no candidate will have enough pledged delegates to call the campaign a victory. They will be dependent upon super delegates. In other words, the Democratic National Convention will be a contested convention. It is true, obviously, that Secretary Clinton has received the overwhelming support from superdelegates. There is no debate about that. She leads me in the number of superdelegates by an overwhelming, approximately 10-to-1 margin. But here is the point. For the media to be lumping together on Tuesday night, the pledged delegates and the superdelegates is just not accurate. Pledged delegates are pledged to vote for their candidates. Superdelegates make their final decision at the convention on July 25th, 6 long weeks from today. Superdelegates can and have changed their candidate choice in the past. This is not Bernie Sanders stating an opinion. This is from Luis Miranda, Communications Director for the Democratic National Committee. I don't always agree with the DNC, but this is what Mr. Miranda said in a recent interview with Jake Tapper of CNN. Quote, superdelegates, I think one of the problems is the way the media reports it. Any night that you have a primary or caucus, the media lumps in superdelegates that they have pooled because they call them up and say, who are you supporting? They don't actually vote until the convention. And so they shouldn't be included in any count on primary or caucus night, because the only thing you are picking on primary and caucus nights are the pledged delegates based on the vote. That is what the communications director of the Democratic National Committee says, and he is exactly right. So for the media or anybody else or Secretary Clinton to say on Tuesday night, let's add together all of the superdelegates that I have plus the pledge delegates I have and we're over the top is inaccurate. Now I am not naive. I am pretty good in arithmetic. I understand that the battle for the Democratic nomination that I am waging is a very, very steep climb. No one has heard me say differently. But given the fact that when I began this campaign a year ago, when I was 60 points behind Secretary Clinton, when I was 50 points down here in the first poll done in California, and where just the other day there was a poll that had us 1 point ahead, we have come a very long way, and steep climbs and challenges are not something that this campaign shies away from. As all of you know, I am not a great fan of the current nominating process. It is a deeply flawed process, and whether I win this nomination or whether I do not win this nomination, I will do everything that I can to change it. The idea that more than 400 superdelegates came on board Secretary Clinton's campaign before any other candidate had declared their willingness to run for office is totally absurd. That is called an anointment process, not a democratic process with a small or large D. Imagine that, the establishment coming on board and saying, this is our candidate, doesn't matter who is running against her, doesn't matter how the campaign unfolds, that is our candidate. The idea that these superdelegates were on board Secretary Clinton's campaign 10 months before the first vote was counted in Iowa is totally nonsensical. And that is a process which must be changed, and I will do my best to change it. Clearly, as everybody knows, the political world has changed since April 2015, when Secretary Clinton received the support of 400 superdelegates. Now, as we go forward, let me be very clear that I do understand that we have an uphill road to travel, but I do also want to make it clear what I will be telling to these superdelegates, because they are now in their position, whether I like it or not, those are the rules, rules I intend to change, but they are the rules right now. And the case that we make to the superdelegates is fairly obvious, and that is the election of Donald Trump as President of the United States would, in my view, be a disaster for this country. His bigotry against Mexicans and Latinos, against Muslims, against African Americans, against women, against veterans, is not something that can be tolerated in the United States in the year 2016. Further, his economic agenda will result in the rich becoming much richer while everybody else continues to become poorer. And clearly his foreign policies are extremely reckless. Donald Trump must not be elected president. Therefore, the Democrats need the strongest possible candidate to defeat Donald Trump. And I believe, and the case that I will make to the superdelegates, is that based on all of the objective evidence that I have seen, the Sanders campaign is the campaign to defeat Donald Trump. In national poll after national poll, and in statewide poll after statewide poll, we defeat Trump by much greater numbers than Secretary Clinton. Polls in California, in Michigan, in New Hampshire, in New Jersey, just within the last few days or few weeks, and other states show that we defeat Donald Trump by much greater numbers than does Secretary Clinton. In fact, as you may know, there are states where Secretary Clinton actually loses to Trump while we defeat Trump, North Carolina, among many others. The latest NBC national poll had Bernie Sanders beating Trump by 15 points, Clinton beating him by 3 points. There have been some national polls in which Trump actually came on top of Secretary Clinton. But polling is not the only reason why I believe that I am the strongest candidate. What our campaign has done is to bring millions of people into the political process who previously were not engaged. And that is working class people, and that is young people by the millions. Voter registration, right here in California, Secretary of State just came out with some numbers yesterday in which voter registration has surged here in California, and it is equally true in many other states around this country. And here in California, that surge is tied to young people registering to vote as well as Latinos. This is extremely important. But equally important, from the perspective of any delegate going to the Democratic National Convention, is the simple fact that our campaign has the energy, it has the enthusiasm, and it has the grassroots activism that a national general campaign, general election campaign, needs to bring out a large voter turnout. Here is a political truism. Republicans win, as they did in 2014, when people are demoralized, when they give up on the political process. When voter turnout is low, Republicans do well. When people are energized, when they are prepared to stand up and fight for change, Democrats do well. I think all of the objective evidence suggests that our campaign has the energy, has the enthusiasm, which will translate into a large voter turnout in the general election in November. And that means not only do Democrats retain the White House, we regain the U.S. Senate, we do better in the House, we win governor's races all over this country.
Brian Becker is an organizer and activist and a founder of the Answer Coalition. He hosts a daily radio program for Sputnik News called Loud and Clear and spoke about Clinton, Sanders, the media, and more with author and syndicated political cartoonist Ted Rall Monday.
Welcome, Ted.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Hillary Clinton just won the Puerto Rico primary, which supposedly puts her just 28 delegates away from clinching the Democratic nomination. But Bernie Sanders is still vowing to take his campaign to the Democratic National Convention. How do you view it? What is Sanders looking for today in California? Is it possible that he can score another victory? And if so, if Sanders survives California, if he wins today, what will that mean for the time between now and the Democratic Party convention in July?
It's certainly possible that he will win today. Polls show him neck and neck, and he's been consistently outperforming the polls throughout the primary season. So it wouldn't shock me. I have a lot of friends in California. They tell me that Bernie's got a lot of momentum. I hear that there are huge crowds. I think it's California also doesn't have as many restrictive rules in terms of early voter registration, which is what hurt Bernie in New York. So I think he could pull out a victory in California. That would be contrary to the media narrative, extremely, I think, disquieting for Hillary Clinton's campaign. It would have to be. At this point, she's looking to seal the deal. And to lose the most important, largest state in the country, a state that Democrats have to win in the fall, would have to just be devastating for her. As for what it is that he's seeking, well, only Bernie Sanders and the inside the insiders in his campaign really know that. In the past, historically, candidates always say they're going to fight until the bitter end, all the way to the convention, and then for the most part, they don't. But then sometimes they do, as we've seen in 1980 and, in fact, in 2008 to some extent with Hillary Clinton. So I could see, I'm going to just put my money on that he is really going to go to the, all the way to the convention. No candidate is going to have this sealed, contrary to today's media narrative. You're going to hear tonight that Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, but that's based on superdelegate votes that that's fraudulent. The superdelegates have not voted. They're not going to vote until the convention in July. They can change their mind, and this is an electoral representative democracy. It is not a pollocracy. We do not choose our political leaders based on an Associated Press poll, no matter how reliable or how stubborn the superdelegates are. You also have to consider the fact that the superdelegates in question, who, when they were polled, this was way back in November of 2015.
Right. This was before Sanders took off. I mean, all of this, I just want to jump in here, Ted, because it seems to me that Bernie Sanders is not just running against Hillary Clinton, not just running against Hillary Clinton, the choice of the Democratic Party establishment, but the mainstream media from the beginning has attempted to create a Clinton nomination by creating what I would call the aura of inevitability. In other words, it's just a matter of time. Sanders is at best a protest candidate. He can't win. And yet here we have, 8 months later, millions and millions of people who have joined the Sanders campaign, come to rallies, made small donations, created a campaign that's more like a movement from below. And yet at the same time, Sanders hasn't lost to Hillary Clinton. So now Sanders is fighting for a change in the rules because they say the policy and the program and the way the elections have been conducted are rigged. He says the superdelegates are something undemocratic, but Sanders right now is making his case to those superdelegates. Talk about what his line is to them.
Well, his line to them is quite simple, that he's more electable against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton. And certainly that's what the head-to-head matchups have consistently shown throughout the season. The counter-narrative to that coming from the Clinton camp, and it's not nothing, is that, of course, Bernie Sanders hasn't had a lot of media attention, so therefore his negatives haven't had a chance to tick upwards as fast as Trump's or Hillary Clinton's. That's kind of funny, of course, because he's been deprived of that media coverage that he's much wanted, in large part because of the Democratic National Committee that's dominated by Hillary Clinton supporters. He's definitely, I think, after more than just some rules changes, although certainly he would like to see that. I think he still thinks he can win. If you're Bernie Sanders, you've got to be wondering what the FBI is going to do in terms of a possible indictment. You've got to wonder if...
Not of Bernie Sanders, you mean of Hillary Clinton.
I'm sorry, yes. If you're Bernie Sanders, you've got to be wondering if there's a Hillary Clinton scandal related to the email scandal. You've got to wonder if she's going to be indicted. And you'd hate to drop out only to have 2 or 3 weeks later have to come back in because she's no longer a viable candidate or she's been given a perp walk. It's not over until it's over. He's had a lot of campaigns throughout his own personal history that have gone to the bitter end, been very close. So I think he really thinks he can still win this thing. And in a broader sense, even if he can't, he's doing this in order to create a space for leftist politics within electoral politics in the U.S., which has not existed, arguably, since McGovern in 72.
Can there be progressive politics, from your point of view, from within the Democratic Party? In other words, if Sanders loses, for instance, and Hillary Clinton is the nominee. And Sanders then tells his supporters, well, look, we gave it the best shot. We changed the narrative. The debate has opened up. There's the issues that are important to us, like student debt, like affordable health care, affordable housing. They're now on the table. We've moved Hillary Clinton to the left. Now we have to sort of fold our tent, get behind Hillary Clinton. Otherwise, Donald Trump could take the presidency. I mean, will people follow him? I mean, obviously some will and some won't, but talk about the big broad picture of you. And is that any path towards progressive change?
Well, I think the Democratic Party is allergic to true progressive leftist politics within its ranks, and it's made a big effort to expel them over the years, most notably through the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council. The thing is that the argument that look, we fought the good fight, we did our best, we did better than we thought, and now we have to beat this existential threat. You know, it's a good argument, except for one thing. It's the same old argument that they've trotted out every time anyone who had a whiff of leftyism started an insurgent campaign. They did it to John Edwards in 2008. They did it to Howard Dean in 2004. And they did it to Ted Kennedy in 1980, probably most brutally, with a bunch of rules changes that were that denied him the nomination at the very last moment at the Democratic National Convention. So the problem is this keeps happening. If this were a one-time or a two-time or a three-time thing, I think a lot of liberals would suck it up and say, okay, all right, we'll try again in 4 years. But the problem is we just keep losing. We're like Charlie Brown trying to kick that football, and Lucy always pulls it away.
Let's go back even a little bit further in history to the 1964 presidential contest. You had Barry Goldwater, who I have to say at that time was considered as great or greater of an existential threat by liberals to everything that they stood for and to peace. He was considered the war candidate. He was against the Civil Rights Act. He was considered just a fierce sort of almost fascist anti-communist. Parenthetically, Hillary Clinton was one of his campaigners in 1964. She was what was called a Goldwater girl. But then the liberals and people in the center, people who cared that the country not go in the direction, say, of fascist Italy, they voted for Lyndon Baines Johnson to prevent war, presumably. And then 6 months, 8 months later, Johnson was in Vietnam, really in Vietnam, 500,000 troops in Vietnam, and the war was completely underway, full throttle. And for a long time, the liberals still didn't say anything against the war because they didn't want to, quote, help the Republicans, help the Goldwater wing of the Republicans. In some ways, that's why young people who didn't care about all that took the leadership in the anti-war movement starting in 1965. I mean, we can see this cycle repeating over and over and over again, and it's the same arguments. What about war? What about the Supreme Court, et cetera? But Hillary Clinton, in many ways, is the war candidate.
Well, yes, she is, and it's notable that this time around we're not even hearing any claims on the part of the Clinton campaign that she would not be a war candidate. She hasn't signaled that she's learned anything from her votes to invade Afghanistan, Iraq, or for that matter, her policy to destroy Syria and Libya and turn both into failed states by supporting radical fundamentalist Islamists. So there's no question that when you vote for Hillary Clinton, you are getting another war candidate. That is just a fact. Everybody who's voting for her is voting for that consciously with eyes open. They can't possibly claim to have been fooled when she goes to war against Iran or North Korea or God knows who else.
Yeah, and talk about the Donald Trump phenomena, because, of course, Trump is running what would be called an unconventional race. That's putting it mildly. He's not Wall Street's candidate. Their candidate really is Hillary Clinton. His support comes from below. He's tapping into a lot of anger, but he's also, and that's always talked about, the anger of white workers whose economic situation has deteriorated or who themselves may be in terrible debt or unable to work full time. All of those things are real in America. One out of every two people is either in poverty or near poverty. That's real. But the other thing is the media is just covering Donald Trump wall to wall. I mean, in some ways, even perhaps more than the anger of white working class folks, you have nonstop corporate media supporting or promoting the candidate for their own narrow interest that Wall Street says will be a disaster for the United States of America.
Well, that's right. And I do want to talk a little. I do want to talk about Trump and address that. But I wanted to just get back a little bit to the Supreme Court argument, which you mentioned earlier. And I think it's well worth talking about because as for me, whenever I get into a Clinton versus Sanders discussion with anyone, what about the Supreme Court? That always comes up. You know, what's funny is, forgotten in all this, is I'm 52 years old. I've never lived under a liberal Supreme Court, so I don't exactly know what it is that these people think that they're going to be missing. But Donald Trump is a unique phenomenon. I just spent the last few months working on my biography of Donald Trump, just called Trump, and comes out in July. And when you're doing a biography of someone, you get to know them pretty well. I've read everything that there is to read about him, and there's a lot to read. And the more you read, actually, the more frightening he is. He really is. Everything that everybody says is true. There is a fascist tone, although not a fascist program so much, because that would require actual thought and planning on the part of Donald Trump. And he's doing this more spontaneously. It's coming to him organically. He's winging it. But that's terrifying in a different way. And I think the Clinton campaign does have a strong argument in saying, look, lesser of two evils has never counted more than this year when you've got this guy who has this base of support. We're talking about a candidate who's received and not shied away from the endorsements of David Duke, the former Klansman, the members of various white power group organizations, Stormfront, and et cetera. He risks legitimizing these highly marginalized right-wing, neo-Nazi, skinhead, highly racist groups that have always been on the fringes of American politics. So he is scary. But I think the problem is that the Democratic Party has cried wolf too often. They said John McCain was too scary to vote for. He was no Donald Trump.
So let me ask you, Ted, then, given your research and the fact that you paid a lot of attention to Trump and you have a book coming out, all the points that you say are undoubtedly true, would you be supporting the idea this time, if not other times, that people who are progressive should actually support Hillary Clinton, that Donald Trump represents like an existential threat to democracy or to communities of color, to Muslims, to Mexicans? Is that sort of where you're landing?
Not for me personally. I'm not going to cast a vote for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, to me, a vote is an endorsement, and I can't endorse the murder of Libyans, Syrians, and Afghans or Iraqis and hundreds of thousands of other people that she's had a hand in, either directly or indirectly. I just won't do that. It's indecent. It's obscene. But I guess the difference for me is that I'm going to be a little more respectful of people who decide to go that way. It's kind of reminiscent of the French voters who decided to vote to support Sarkozy against Le Pen a few years ago in the second round in order to prevent Le Pen from coming to power. You could see why they did that, but of course they ended up with Sarkozy. I think in the end you have to decide what's more important. Trying to save the Democratic Party, trying to save liberalism, or trying to stop Donald Trump. I think that there's so little air, really, between the Democratic and Republican parties, and there's so little difference between the fundamental policies of a Hillary Clinton and a Donald Trump, that it really comes down to symbolism in the end. And for me, and I guess you could say all elections are about symbolism because you can only really affect your own vote. And no election in U.S. history has ever been decided by a single vote, so you can only really cast a symbolic vote when you're making your personal decision. For me, the symbolism of supporting Hillary Clinton is such that I just couldn't live with myself if I did it. But I'm not going to be as scornful of those who vote for the lesser of two evils.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.